West Virginia has produced noted scientists and technicians, mathematicians and engineers, plus businessmen and women who have made their mark on the nation and the world. Some are called heroes, others pioneers. Some have won the nation's and the world's highest awards. They grew up here in the mountains, many in small towns and deep hollows, and today are soaring in the sciences and in business. First, a couple you might call the Ice Hunters.
We've drilled to the highest place on Earth in the Himalayas, a place called Dasupu, 23,500 feet.
We live in tents that aren't heated. We work in a dome that's not heated. The only heat that we have throughout the day is the heat that's generated by the propane stove on which we cook our food. So the cold is with you all the time.
Imagine traveling to some of the world's most remote places. Inside the Arctic Circle, Antarctica, atop a volcano in Africa, the tallest mountains of South America, high up in the Himalayas of Tibet.
There's something about going into a village in the center of Tibet where there's never been a Westerner. You're the first contact that these people see, and first time they see people with blue eyes. I see it as an opportunity to see the world in many places as it was before it changed.
This is the processing tent.
But it is to such cold, remote places that Lonnie Thompson of Braxton County and Ellen Mosley Thompson of Kanawha County, both Marshall graduates, go on expeditions each year in the tradition of the great pioneers and explorers. This husband and wife team aren't going to the ends of the earth just to say they've been there. They're world-renowned paleoclimatologists, people who study the history of the Earth's climate. And they're finding that history hidden in ice.
See the lack of bubbles, the elongated bubbles, and the very clear ice, whereas the bottom 49 meters of the core look like typical glacial ice.
You don't have to have an isotope or a temperature.
Their search for ice starts in Columbus, Ohio, at the Byrd Polar Research Center at Ohio State University, where they are both distinguished professors. In the basement are a group of scientists who study ice cores. From here, for the last 35 years, Lonnie and Ellen, both 62, have been exploring the world's polar regions as well as glaciers in the tropics in order to retrieve those cores. They bring the ice back to this building to be analyzed. For dust particles, chemistry, and isotopes. With the information they gather, they're able to restructure the Earth's climate history, a science now known as ice core paleoclimatology. To get a sense of how much ice they've retrieved, Lonnie points to a map of the world with dozens of red markers on it.
These are the places our team has drilled. We just came back from Wakhan here. In December, going down to the Antarctic Peninsula, we'll be drilling there. Next spring, we'll be going to New Guinea, the only ice field in that part of the world.
In the late 1960s, ice core drilling started in the polar regions, and not long afterward, Lonnie got the opportunity to go to Antarctica on one of the early drilling projects. While he was there, he started to think about all the ice between the poles.
We know that in our climate system, there are major things that impact people, like monsoons and El Niños, that are tropical phenomena. We thought, well, let's see if we could connect Antarctic ice core records with Greenland ice core records with something in between. And that's when we found this Quelccaya ice cap.
Quelccaya is a glacial ice cap 19,000 feet up in the Andes Mountains of Peru. It's the largest tropical ice cap on Earth. And so with a tiny grant from the National Science Foundation, Lonnie set off on his first expedition to try to find the Quelccaya ice cap. He did find it, and thought he and his team would be able to fly in drills just like they did in Antarctica.
But it became very clear in two reconnaissance flights that there was no way they could get close to this ice field. So essentially, we failed. This is where you make a choice. Failure can be a learning process, and either we gave up trying to get into high mountains, or you came up with another way.
Lonnie's other way was to design and build lightweight solar-powered drills, ones that horses or yaks could carry up the high mountains. In 1983, Thompson and his team used those lightweight solar-powered drills to drill two ice cores to bedrock on the Quelccaya ice cap.
Quelccaya will always be the most important record that I ever recovered because it was such a challenge at a time when no one believed it could be done.
Lonnie's success then has paved the way for everything else that he and his team have done since then. 56 expeditions in 16 countries. And in recent years, he's done it despite severe asthma. In his pursuit of ice, Lonnie Thompson has spent more time above 20,000 feet than anyone in history, nearly 4 years of his life. Among fellow scientists, he's a hero. Some refer to him as the Indiana Jones of glaciers. Scott Baer, professor of earth sciences at Ohio State University, describes Lonnie as a modest man who carries a huge intellectual stick.
He speaks quite softly and gently, but he backs everything he discusses to fellow scientists with data, with references. And he's quietly a very athletic fellow. To go where he's gone so many times over so many years, it's not just the intellectual component of his science, it's the physicality of getting the data. And I think that surprises a lot of people because he is so modest.
What became his life's work began in the mountains of West Virginia.
I grew up in a small farm outside of Gasway in West Virginia. I would say that it was on the poor side of Gasway, which is poor overall, but it was an excellent place to grow up. So we spent a lot of time in the mountains, and I was in the Boy Scouts there. So we spent a lot of weekends up on Cheat Mountain in different parts of West Virginia. And I always think that those early days played a very important role in what I do today. Growing up in West Virginia, it kind of toughens you. You don't give in real easy when you come up to an obstacle.
The middle child of three, Lonnie was a shy and slightly geeky boy. His father was an electrician and his mother a seamstress and homemaker. And though they only went to school through the eighth grade, Lonnie's mother, Frances Thompson, was determined her children would get a good education.
When they were very small, I used to hold them in my arms and I'd tell them stories. I'd say, when you grow up, you're going to go to school and you're going to learn, you travel and you go to different places and see all these things. I did that from the time they were born.
We're just on top of the ridge above the house, and this is where the garden used to be, where all these trees are now. The chicken house was right here, set on this flat. The barn, you can actually see the top of it.
While still in grade school, Lonnie got interested in studying the weather.
And up in the attic of the barn, I had a weather station, had a wind speed direction indicator on top of the barn, and all of the barometers and the things to measure the temperature in the morning before I went to school, and in the evening when I got back, I'd come up and make readings in the weather station, record that. So that's where I really got interested in weather and climate.
While growing up, times were tough. Sometimes Lonnie didn't have enough money for lunch at school, but he worked hard. In high school, he held down four jobs, and in his senior year, was voted most likely to succeed at Gasaway High School. But two tragedies around that time changed the course of Lonnie's life. His father, Roscoe, died of a heart attack. And 2 years later, his sister, Regina, was killed in a car accident on her way home from Marshall University.
Those were two very big blows early on, especially for my mom. With all things in life, they either break you or make you. To me, it brought home at a very early age the importance of every day, and that if you're going to do something, you need to get on with it because you You have no guarantee what tomorrow is going to bring.
At Marshall, Lonnie majored in physics, but later switched to coal geology, thinking that his best hope for a job in West Virginia was in the coal business. In his senior year, a young woman came into his life, physics major Ellen Mosley.
I grew up in Charleston, West Virginia. My father was a native Charlestonian. My mother is a transplant from a small town called Lancaster in Lancaster County, Virginia, but they were both graduates of Charleston High School.
An only child, Ellen Mosley was a mischievous tomboy who loved to roller skate and ride horses. She was also a good student who loved science.
My interest in science started with science fairs and, you know, with science projects. It was interesting because neither of my parents were scientists.
Ellen's father was an insurance salesman and her mother a writer and poet, and they instilled in their daughter the importance of hard work. Today, women can be found in every field of science. But in 1966, when Ellen Mosley entered Marshall University, a woman science major, especially physics, was a rare phenomenon. The department chair called her into his office.
He began to grill me, like, well, so you're interested in physics? How interested in physics are you? Are you really committed to the program? It was very clear that he was trying to discourage me. And his final comment was, well, I do want you to recognize that you're taking a seat that could be filled by a male student who will go on to be a breadwinner, and you will probably go on to be a housewife. And he says, if you start the program, I expect you to finish it.
And finish it she did. After graduation, Ellen Mosley married Lonnie Thompson, and they had a daughter, Regina. Ellen also continued her education at Ohio State. Together, this young couple from West Virginia got in on the ground floor of the new science of restructuring the Earth's climate history using ice cores. Ellen was among the first women ever to lead a polar expedition, and this past winter, she led an ice drilling expedition to the Antarctic Peninsula. The last segment of the journey was in a small plane.
We've got up 6 sleeping tents, the cook tent, toilet tent, the drill site, behind that more cargo.
They drilled nearly 1,500 feet down to levels dating to the last ice age.
Right at the end, right?
As Ellen supervises, the team loads the first boxes of frozen ice cores onto a small airplane. The beginning of a 9,000-mile voyage back to Ohio State. All the ice cores that Ellen and Lonnie collect end up in 2 giant freezer rooms.
This is the super cold room. We're just going to go in here for a second, I presume. Oh, my goodness.
It's minus 30 centigrade in here. That's minus 22 Fahrenheit. On shelf after shelf, stacked to the ceiling, are silver tubes containing 4 miles of ice cores, dating back as long ago as 800,000 years.
It's like a frozen library. It's the only tropical collection in the world because these glaciers are disappearing. One of our jobs is archive. 20 years from now, there'll be brighter people, better techniques, but there's not going to be any ice out there for them to go collect.
When you're with Lonnie Thompson, you get the sense that this is a man in a hurry. With glaciers around the world melting rapidly, he's aiming to drill as many ice cores as he can before they disappear altogether.
Kalkaya Ice Cap, we've been monitoring the retreat of the glaciers there. In the first 15 years of monitoring, ice was retreating at 6 meters per year up this valley. In the last 15 years, it's over 60 meters per year, 10 times faster. So as we go forward, I expect to see an acceleration in the rate at which the change is taking place. CO2 drops to 180, 190 parts per million by volume during ice ages. And when it gets warm, it rises to 280, 290 parts per million by volume. And of course, today we're at 386 parts per million by volume. There's no analog to where we are in 800,000 years. And it's rising at 2 parts per million every year.
No one can say for sure what is going to happen to Earth. But if Lonnie Thompson is correct, and he believes the scientific data backs him up on this, by 2020, there will be no global warming skeptics left. Lonnie Thompson's work on ice cores has been documented in two books, El Niño and Thin Ice. Lonnie and Ellen's office walls and bookshelves are lined with dozens of national and international awards and honors, including, in Lonnie's case, the nation's highest honor for scientists, the National Medal of Science, which President Bush gave him in 2007. Time magazine has named Lonnie a hero of the environment. And the woman who was once questioned about whether she should study physics has been given Marshall University's highest award. In 2007, she also became a member of the National Academy of Sciences, and last year was appointed the new director of the Byrd Polar Research Center at Ohio State. Though Lonnie acknowledges that scientific knowledge is important in what they've achieved, more important, he says, are the social skills they learned growing up in West Virginia. The ability to relate to people from all walks of life.
You can be the greatest scientist in the world, but if people don't want to work with you, you're not going to get anywhere.
In the future, the Thompsons plan to spend more time in their home state.
We've talked about building a small place, a cabin, where we can write. Maybe go around the state giving lectures at high schools, trying to encourage students to think about further education. Applying for scholarships and fellowships. One of the nice things about being from West Virginia is that you can go home again.
You're listening to Inspiring West Virginians, men and women who have made their mark in the sciences and in business.